Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, the myth of the spoiled child. Parenting expert Alfie Cohn on why he thinks we're much too worried about permissive parents and helicopter parents alike. Also, that firestorm that Michael Lewis has created with his new book on high-frequency trading this week. We're almost sure that most of you have heard about it. And we're sure that, like me, many of you don't really get what high-frequency trading actually is. So we will step back and explain what Michael Lewis and the people he wrote about have wrought. But first, here's what Fort Hood Commander General Mark Milley is saying about the Fort Hood shooter, Ivan Lopez.
We have very strong evidence that he had a medical history that indicates an unstable psychiatric or psychological condition.
An unstable psychiatric condition, a very general phrase which has led to one very specific piece of widespread speculation that he suffered from PTSD. But what if it wasn't PTSD? What if Specialist Lopez was suffering from a moral injury? Of course, any speculation is just that and not worth very much, really. But we're going to use this opportunity to begin the show today to bring attention to a little-known condition that many war veterans may be suffering from and that probably needs a lot more attention and to be more a part of the national conversation, specifically at moments like this. Moral injury, the violation or disorientation of your sense of right and wrong. David Wood is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who has covered soldiers and the military for 35 years and recently wrote a three-part series for the Huffington Post about moral injury. He joins us now to tell us more about it and to take your calls. Veterans, tell us if this rings true or tell us your moral injury stories at 212-433-WNYC. And David Wood, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Can you give us more of a definition of moral injury?
Sure. So it's my experience on the battlefield and coming back home and being with people making that transition is that military service in wartime occupies a different moral universe than what most of us are used to. There are things that go on in the wartime universe that are okay there and not okay back here. For example, I've written about a young Marine I got to know who was at a terrible firefight in Afghanistan, and at one point he saw a figure come running around the side of a compound, raised his M4, got the person in his sights. The person was shooting at him, only to realize at the last second that's a 13-year-old kid, and pulled the trigger and killed him dead. Now, in that moral universe, that was the right thing to do, protecting yourself and your Marines in a firefight. But back here, that's a terrible, I mean, killing a child is, it's an awful thing. And so that Marine, that person struggles with that discrepancy of having experiences that are okay in one world and not okay back in the civilian world.
And that's moral injury. The result of that for him, it's really the result of an experience like that for him psychologically and emotionally, correct?
And again, the moral injury is not about American troops doing immoral things on the battlefield. It's not about war crimes. It's about one's internal sense of right and wrong, one's internal sense of how the world is supposed to work and who am I? It's, you know, we like to think that we're all really decent, good people, and yet in wartime, bad things happen. For example, a medic who can't save a morally wounded soldier. A mortally wounded soldier.
Yeah, I got that.
The medic, and I've known several medics who've experienced this, they beat themselves up. There must have been something I could have done. I didn't try this. I didn't have that piece of equipment. I didn't have enough training. Oh, I'm a terrible person. I'm ashamed of who I am. That's moral injury, and that's actually relatively common.
And part two of your series, the whole middle article, is called When Right and Wrong Are Hard to Tell Apart. So that Marine story, for example, is a case of that?
Yeah, it's not so much they're hard to tell apart, but they're hard to encompass within one person. I was in a war zone and I did this. Now I'm back here as a civilian, and that thing that I did, I feel bad about. Now, the interesting thing about and the connection with Fort Hood is that we know that Specialist Lopez had a session with an Army psychiatrist. It's very, very hard for a patient and a therapist to establish the degree of trust so that somebody can say, I feel like I did a horrible thing. I'm a medic and I didn't save someone. I'm a bad person. Very hard to admit that. And, you know, military medicine is aimed not at curing the whole person, but at getting a person back into service, back into the fight. So it's a very sort of, in essence, a short-term kind of thing. And so moral injury, I think, goes on and on and on, mostly untended.
Your point being that in the case of Corporal Lopez, or Specialist Lopez, he only had an hour with this particular psychiatrist, I think is what's been reported. And so there's no way to know whether he was suffering from moral injury because chances are he wouldn't have established enough of a trust relationship with this therapist to go that deep.
That's correct.
You write that the military trains today actually in a very values-based way. The training is infused with messages about right and wrong, but that it's a different morality than civilian morality. Are you questioning the training or the underlying values or just reporting on the excruciatingly difficult moral trade-offs people are being asked to make in fast-moving life and death situations in war and the emotional toll that it takes on them?
Look, Brian, I don't have a good answer for this. We put people in very, very difficult situations. They perform admirably in most cases. They come home and we don't understand them. I think what emerged out of my reporting for this series was a critical need for more mental health counseling. We just can't get to the people that we need to get to with the mental health specialists that we have, both in the VA, Veterans Administration, and private ones. We need a lot more of it. We need to be able to have military people spend more time with their therapists. People that I've talked to who have significant moral injury say it takes years and years to get to what's really at the heart of what's bothering them. So, you know, we need a lot more of that.
Moral injury, moral injury, the violation or disorientation of your sense of right and wrong. Veterans, does this sound like something you've experienced or that people you know have experienced? Call up with your reaction to David Wood's reporting, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Another example from his series, a 33-year-old vet who killed the wrong person. He said taking another man's life and later finding out that wasn't who you were supposed to shoot was an innocent mistake, but caused him a tremendous amount of suffering later on. So, David, is moral injury just a high-concept term for traumatic grief or survivor guilt that you came out alive when another innocent person did not, even if you did nothing intentionally immoral?
Well, yes, both of those things are included under the general heading of moral injury. Look, one thing that I found is that there are many, many, many different forms of moral injury that can range from grief at losing a very close comrade in battle, to just, very intense emotional experiences that you really can't process while you're in the war zone. You come home and all of a sudden this stuff starts weighing on you very heavily. War is a really, really intense experience. And the tastes of it that I've gotten as a reporter are that you're so busy, you're so stressed, sometimes so scared, a lot of times so bored, that you really can't deal with your experiences until you get back home.
You created a Venn diagram of the symptoms that moral injury and PTSD share and those that are different. Can you summarize that for us?
Sure. So let me just talk about PTSD for a minute. PTSD was recognized in 1980 by by the American Psychiatric Association and set down very specific terms of diagnosis. PTSD has to be based on an experience you have which was both terrifying and you were afraid of losing your life imminently. So both of those things have to be true. It's called a triggering event. And so PTSD is based on fear. As I say, it's a very specific diagnosis, and there's specific kinds of therapies and drug treatment and so forth. From PTSD come often sleeplessness, anxiety, depression, anger, sometimes bouts of hyperarousal or hypervigilance, which keeps you awake at night. So those are common to PTSD, and moral injury as well can produce those kinds of symptoms. People who are suffering from moral injury, as I understand it, have symptoms that are not common to PTSD. For example, grief, especially traumatic grief, which is a term I came across that describes the sudden and unexpected loss of someone who is very close to you. So so those are some of the things that are sort of unique to moral injury.
So would the treatment for PTSD and moral injury be different?
Yeah, very different. One of the common treatments for PTSD is to have the person relate the terrifying and life-threatening experience that they had over and over and over again. So you talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and over time it begins to lose its sting. With moral injury, if you talk about the experience that you've had that's causing you anxiety or depression or anger or difficulty, talking about it over and over tends to drive it deeper and deeper and deeper into your subconscious, and so it makes the hurt worse, not better.
But you're right about one piece of therapy perhaps helping some people is having the veteran focus on the good that came from the decision he made, not to minimize the loss of life, let's say, of that 13-year-old that first Marine in your first example killed, but to focus on the positive outcomes of the battle, that kid was shooting up his platoon. Is that a core healing technique?
Yes, Brian, it is. One of the most interesting approaches of therapy for people with moral injury is helping them put it in perspective. One thing that therapists are finding can be very effective is to say, okay, you shot a kid. That was bad. There's no way to gloss over that. That was a bad thing that you did. But let's put it in perspective. Let's make a list of all the people or influences that played in that situation, and let's assign each one a percentage that, and it can only add up to 100. So you're the trigger puller. Let's give you 35%. How about the kid himself? He's got some blame here too, right? So let's give him 20%. How about the Taliban? They taught him to shoot and gave him a weapon. We'll give them 20%, and maybe who else? Your military recruiter who got you into the Marine Corps, the President of the United States who sent you to Afghanistan. Let's give luck or God or some other influence. Add it all up, and we can see, wow, wait a second. I shot a kid, but I don't have to carry that burden all by myself. So acknowledging the thing that happened is critical to moral injury therapy, but helping the person put it in perspective is just as critical.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning military reporter David Woods. He has a three-part series on Huffington Post about moral injury, a disorientation to your sense of right and wrong that many combat vets experience after they come back from war, and something that at least should be part of the national conversation now as people speculate about the Fort Hood shooter, Ivan Lopez. Not to say that David Woods or anybody else knows that this was relevant to him, but everybody seems to be speculating about PTSD. Well, there's this other thing that more people should know about that's related but also quite different. Jonathan in Bayside, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would just like to point out that I'm looking at, I'm a veteran myself of the Iraq War, and I'm looking at Specialist Lopez's picture on the front page of the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have a combat action badge or a combat infantryman's badge.
It's correct. Technically, he was not in combat, as I understand it. He was a truck driver in Iraq for 4 months, not considered a combat position.
Right. But here's the thing, Brian, is that as a leader overseas, when our soldiers, even if they weren't, I was in a combat service support unit doing the, we didn't have truck drivers specifically. We had warehouse people, but same idea. If our soldiers were attacked, even by mortar fire, where they were living, we filled out the paperwork to get them a combat action badge. So if the Specialist Lopez was in some kind of combat action, even as a truck driver, he would be wearing that combat action badge.
Therefore what?
Well, I just wanted to point it out because as a veteran, I would prefer not to be stigmatized by an ever-growing list of potential things that other people could think that I'm crazy about.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's such an important thing to raise, and I'm glad you got to that level of it, because, David Woods, this is something that you write about in the article.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, and I think you point out something very, very important that we should have said at the outset and should be part of anything that we write about or talk about regarding Specialist Lopez, and that is, lots of people go to war. Lots of people have different kinds of experiences, some of which they struggle with. Some have PTSD. Most don't have PTSD, and they come home, and they're perfectly fine, and they don't become mass murderers. And even the something under 200,000 military members who've been diagnosed with PTSD don't become mass murderers. So there's no connection. There's no research that I'm aware of, and I've looked hard, that connects war trauma or PTSD with murder.
War trauma or PTSD with murder. And I noticed in your Venn diagram comparing the causes and symptoms of PTSD to those of moral injury that violence was not on either chart.
No, it's not. And it doesn't necessarily spring from this. Although, as you know, we all get angry and sometimes violent. Doesn't mean we're killers, and it doesn't mean we're sick or anything like that. Look, most of the people that I know who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan and many, many other wars are proud of what they did, had a good experience, are perfectly well-adjusted, and go on to have productive lives. So, you know, we're not talking about a class of people who are somehow should be objects of our pity, not at all.
Burl in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Burl.
Yes. I'm reminded of the terrible thing that happened to this one soldier who was a pilot or just a member of the crew of the Enola Gay in the dropping of the bomb that finished the war in
Hiroshima,
the Second World War.
The atomic bomb.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm a little nervous. But it haunted me, and it was he suffered terribly because he thought he felt guilt and anger and rage about it, and he could get nobody to agree with him, not anybody on the crew nor in life, because it was a wonderful thing that it was that the war was over. But he got no relief until he happened to write a letter to Bertrand Russell, the philosopher and mathematician, who wrote him a long letter back saying, yes, he was guilty of one of the crew, that it was a terrible thing that the bomb was dropped, and it was the first relief he had, but he suffered with depression and anxiety for years to come.
It's a fascinating story, and I guess, in a way, David, it could be the ultimate instance of moral injury. If you're the guy who dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima, even if you thought at the time that that was the right thing to do, that was the moral choice, which certainly the U.S. government thought in light of the options, and of course we could have debates on that for the next 10 years, But there was a sense in the country, there was a sense in the Pentagon that that was the moral decision to make. And whether he came to disbelieve that premise over the course of his life, even if he didn't, maybe that's the ultimate case of moral injury.
Brian, I think the just to sort of sum up the reason why I wrote about this, I think it's important for us all to recognize that we put people like that pilot and like the Marines that I've written about in impossible situations, and then once they come home, we tend to say, thanks for your service, and we'll get you a job, and you know, life goes on. For many of them, life doesn't go on as it did before, and we need to be aware, I think, of the cost of putting people in those morally ambiguous and very, very difficult situations. And bear in mind, these are mostly young folks who don't have a lot of life experience in processing these kinds of things.
Do you
Next
think,
time we think about going to war, I hope we think about this.
You know, Burroughs' story makes me wonder, do you think drone operators are especially susceptible to moral injury? They sit in a room somewhere, maybe in the United States, and order drone strikes in Yemen or Afghanistan or who knows where, based on suspected terrorists they think they're seeing on a screen, and too often innocent people are also killed. I know they're trying to minimize that, but do you think moral injury will be a hallmark of the drone era?
I do. And, Brian, funny you should mention that. I spent some time in a center down at Langley Air Force Base not long ago where the drone operators sit, and they had recently assigned a psychiatrist to walk the floors full-time to help people process through what they're doing. So, you know, moral injury and difficult experiences in wartime, again, doesn't mean you have to be on the ground pulling the trigger. You can be almost anywhere. And again, the people we put in these situations experience this stuff, and we tend not to give them help. So, again, I just hope we keep in mind that this is difficult stuff. Wartime is very, very difficult, and the impact of it goes on and on and on.
Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
There's a lot of factors involved with this. I just actually returned from Afghanistan last year. But I only want to focus on what you just said as far as the morality and the moral complications that may come from this. He said something as far as the training. And the training is one of the training is one of the issues I wanted to focus on. Right now, the environment in the military has so much, as he said, value-based training involved in it, that it is my belief that if that were to be the determining factor in issues like this, or just in general with soldiers, the value-based training and the overwhelming amount of it and the areas basically to be politically correct has had an effect on the way soldiers perceive battle in the aftermath.
For better or for worse?
For worse.
Why?
Well, just not to say that soldiers are robots when they're performing their duties to a certain degree. However, the climate now has been focused mainly on things such as sexual harassment, bullying. These are not things that I'm not saying need to be addressed, but because the military, instead of staging it, they kind of like throw it out there and force feed it, and they haven't really figured out exactly how to incorporate it along with what their core mission is, which is to fight. And
is the point you're making that those kinds of topics distract from the training and morality and moral judgment that they need for these intense combat situations?
In the aftermath, they can. They create a different climate. They create a different soldier. And I don't want to sound insensitive or as if, you know, progress doesn't need to be made in those areas. However, the way the military has gone about it and in the overarching, the overwhelming effect it has had on soldiers, and I've seen it firsthand, is that, for lack of a better word, you may come up with what seems to be a softer soldier. I know I'm going to get beat up for that, but that's the closest word I could come to.
Right, and of course, obviously, you would get a lot of pushback from listeners if we, you know, opened up the phones and decided to go off on this tangent. But do you think, Ben, that this makes soldiers more susceptible to the emotional trauma of experiencing moral injury after they come back from war, maybe having killed innocent people in the line of duty, making difficult moral decisions that may have actually been the right ones, that they're more susceptible to depression and anxiety and things like that as a result of this training?
Every soldier feels those things. So everyone, anyone who is in that situation will experience those feelings. The degree to which they rationalize them, yes, it will definitely have an effect.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. Ben, thank you. And David Woods, before you go, did I see correctly in your article that the Pentagon refuses to acknowledge the existence of or even discuss the topic of moral injury? Did you write that or try and fail to get a comment for this series?
Yes. Brian, I early on in the 4 months I spent reporting these specific stories asked to see someone at the Pentagon who could talk about moral injury and how they're dealing with it and what they think about it. And I was just flatly turned down. No one in the Defense Department would speak on the record or even off the record. I never talked to a human being about this. What I got was a written statement from a public affairs officer. Moral injury is not something the Defense Department wants to think about because they teach people to kill. That's the whole thing. And killing is morally injurious. We know that. So what they do have, though, is mental health programs that can help with some of the side effects of moral injury, such as depression, anxiety, shame, and guilt, and so forth. But it's not very widespread, and it's not very well advertised, and they don't like the term moral injury. And in fact, I think the Navy has some euphemism. I've forgotten what it is. But they're very leery of the whole notion of moral injury because it gets to the heart of what they do.
So how much does that run counter to what I think is your main point in this interview, which is that vets need more opportunities to have this labeled and get treatment for it?
The feedback I've gotten from the series that we ran has been tremendous, and a lot of veterans have written to me saying, thank you, I now understand, I can sort of begin to think about the feelings that I've had since I came back from Iraq or Afghanistan. So my purpose really was twofold, to try to urge that we provide better and more mental health treatment, and that we, as the civilians who sent these folks off to war, think about the consequences of doing that.
David Wood, Pulitzer Prize-winning military reporter, has written a 3-part series in the Huffington Post on moral injury. It also includes resources for where vets can get treatment for this. If you want to go and check it out, we've also linked to his series on our site at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. Thank you so much for an important conversation.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a post-Bridgegate plan for how to fix the Port Authority. Stay with us.